Okay, so I'd like to first thank the organizers for asking me to be part of the program. It's been a wonderful 3 weeks. And Danny has set me a tough assignment, and I have several things that I would like to cover, so I'll try to do the best I can. Now, post the PFI report, there have been a lot of changes in LBNE, the former LBNE, including a change in name, which is not completely decided. Hence, I have put LBN star there. Many of these changes, Milind will update you on. And one important physics consequence of this has been the reopening of certain issues that were decided for the former LBNE. And this includes the question of the baseline and beam design and other physics priorities. So there was an interim international executive board set up, and that will, in a few months' time or very soon, be replaced by a more permanent body. But they decided that in this order, these were the priorities of this new experimental collaboration. It's new because a lot more international participation is being solicited, and the management structure will all be revised and renewed in various ways. So CP and mass hierarchy are the two main priorities, with CP being prioritized higher than mass hierarchy. And also, one would like to do a broad program of really important supporting science, including atmospheric neutrinos, proton decay, supernova neutrinos, cross sections, and other precision measurements using a good near detector. So I first want to focus on some of the issues related to the baseline. And among the questions that has had a lot of recent discussion is 1,300 kilometers, which was the original LBNE baseline, is that the best baseline for the physics of CP and hierarchy? And or is something closer to 2,500 kilometers better? And what kind of near detector should you have to achieve the necessary precision that you need? So I will first talk about recent discussions on this. Before I get to that, I'll just quickly review what we know about the role of a baseline when you're trying to determine CP violation. So it obviously depends on the appearance probability nu mu to nu e, and you can look at the expression and draw certain useful conclusions. The full probability can actually be written down as a sum of three vacuum terms plus matter terms, and then you have terms which are mixed, having both matter and vacuum, and they are typically smaller. So the matter term is not necessarily small. The smaller terms, which you ignore for the most part in the rest of my talk, are order alpha squared, where alpha is the ratio of the solar to the atmospheric mass squared differences. So there's a large term, which we typically call the atmospheric term. So these three are just vacuum terms. And then there's an interference term, which involves both the mass squared differences. And then there is a solar term, which is delta m square 2 1 and can generally be linearized for the baselines that we are looking at because of the smallness of the solar mass square difference compared to the atmospheric mass square difference. So when you are trying to determine CP violation, you want to look at this quantity, which is the CP asymmetry. And your ability to measure this is what determines how sensitive you are to CP. And that's primarily the difference between nu mu to nu e versus nu mu bar to nu e bar. And it's normalized by the sum of these two. So this object, because of the fact that the probability itself can be additively separated into vacuum matter and then small mixed terms, is largely also separable in the same way. And you can then define a figure of merit which takes this form. This is a statistical figure of merit. And from that, you can draw certain general conclusions that the goodness of CP measurements is essentially independent of L. It's independent because when you linearize this term, the ACP square gives you an L square dependence. And this is the event rate, and the event rate falls as L square. So essentially, you end up with something that doesn't depend on this. And similarly, although now that theta 1,3 is large, this was before we knew what it was, so it also is independent of the value of theta 1,3, which is unusual because we are always using stuff that depends on the fact that this parameter is not so small. Okay, so you can look at these plots, and that embodies some of the features I just talked about. Here we are looking at the first oscillation and the second oscillation maxima. And the CP only term, the y-axis has the asymmetry, and this is the baseline. And the vacuum part isolates the intrinsic CP sensitivity, which we are interested in. And these plots are matter-only terms because the intrinsic CP is turned off. And the black is the first oscillation maximum, and this is at the second oscillation maximum. So when you go to the max, obviously you fix L over E. And the CP asymmetry due to delta CP alone is constant with baseline. While if you look at the matter part, that is growing. And that's true of both hierarchies. And the hierarchy determination, then you can tell, is going to benefit from a longer baseline because the matter effect grows. The CP, intrinsic CP measurement, is relatively not that dependent. These are conclusions drawn linearizing the solar term and throwing away certain mixed terms which are small. Okay, so using this, so there's a couple more conclusions that can be drawn, and that is that at the first oscillation maximum, which is this, you want to compare the intrinsic CP asymmetry with the matter CP asymmetry, which you want to separate because you're not interested in the matter part. You want to get a handle on delta CP. So the intrinsic CP asymmetry is larger than the matter asymmetry for baselines less than 1,000, as you can see at the first oscillation max. But once you get beyond 1,000, then the matter asymmetry dominates because it's increasing linearly almost. And at the second oscillation max, however, the intrinsic CPA symmetry is higher than the matter asymmetry for all baselines that you are considering. So the second oscillation max gives you a good handle on intrinsic CP. That's the conclusion you can draw from this. But you have to contend with the fact that rates at the second oscillation maximum are typically much lower, so they're about 10% of what you gather at the first oscillation max. So you really need to combine these to get a handle on the intrinsic CP. It's also interesting to look at a simplified version of the event rate. The appearance event rate depends obviously on the number of target nucleons, and the flux, which is a function of E and L, and the probability and the cross section. And as a first approximation, you can assume that the flux is constant over the band of energies that you're looking at and only drops with L square. And the probability, you can put aside all but the largest terms just to get at a rough idea, qualitative idea of how this behaves. You can throw away all the terms except this. So you're essentially looking at this vacuum term here. And there's a cross section which in this region scales linearly with energy. So when you put all this stuff in, the appearance probability, the appearance rate is a function of L over E, and you can integrate that out over the two maxima that you're interested in to get a roughly constant rate per kiloton megawatt year. And that tells you that you would do well as you move in the baseline range that you're considering, which is roughly 700 to 3,000, and these approximations are good for that range. Okay, so in reality, you can do a more realistic calculation as the physics group did, and the working group for LBNE, and you find that with baseline, the number of events is slowly falling. It's a maximum at around 750 or so, and then it falls slowly at the first oscillation max. These are for various values of delta CP, and the dashed one is the second oscillation max. So here it ramps up and then stays pretty much constant in this range. So after 1,000 kilometers, you begin to lose events from the first oscillation maximum, and the second oscillation maximum rates first ramp up to 1,500 and then stay constant. Now, as I said, the second maximum is important because it helps you break this degeneracy between matter and intrinsic CP. So you want to collect some events from there. So you can now do sensitivity calculations to see what your sensitivity is with baseline. And this shows the delta CP fraction for which you can do hierarchy at 5 sigma using 350 kilotons of liquid argon. So you can see that pretty much once you get beyond 1300, you can cover the entire delta CP fraction at 5 sigma, whether it's inverted or normal. There's a difference in the exposure, though. If you are at 1300, then you need much more exposure in kiloton megawatt years as opposed to what you would need at, say, 2000 or 2500, where you can do the hierarchy much quicker. And it's the same for the inverted hierarchy. Okay, so this shows some work that I did with my students and Vernon and Danny recently. And it shows you the hierarchy at 1,300 kilometers. and points to what you need to increase your sensitivity. So here's atmospheric only data, and its contribution to when you use the underground liquid argon detector to also collect atmospheric neutrinos. You don't have a magnetic field, so you're handicapped by that. And the addition to sensitivity that atmospheric neutrinos give you without a magnetic field is very small. And here you have the dashed curves assume that there is no precise near detector, whereas the solid curves assume the presence of such a detector. And you can see that there's a big difference there. There's also a difference when you add T2K and NOVA data, and there's very little difference when you add T2K and NOVA data. As you can see, the blue curve has all that data in there along with atmospheric, but you can see that it's, if you even have only beam data, which is the magenta curve, there's very little difference between these. The near detector helps you in the favorable region, and but very little can be done by adding stuff or data, adding a near detector or more data in the unfavorable region.
Raj, this atmospheric is only with the this atmospheric is only with the detector that you are
talking about, not other experiments.
No, this is just LBNE atmospheric data. Yeah. Okay, so CP sensitivity and baseline. You can see from here that once you get, is that my phone? Sorry. Yeah. So you can see that if you look at the exposure versus the baseline, once you are beyond 1,000, you can do CP sensitivity 5 sigma with 50% delta CP fraction fairly well, best in this region, 100 to 1,500 survival probabilities of muon neutrinos and antineutrinos. Right.
It's converging, and it is, there is some politics, and I think
we'll all agree on 1,300 kilometers very soon. We will proceed with that. Give us 2 months.
We will all agree to get along.
We've turned into politics, so let's move on to the next talk. Let's thank Raja once more. Our next speaker is Ethan Noah Missimo, and he's going to talk about LBNO before the marriage.